In this episode, Grant Payne's back with me, and it's been almost a year since Grant and I shared on episode 105, how to propagate your own trees, plants, and flowers for free and sell the extras as a side hustle. And I recently had that as a flashback episode earlier in October. So what's changed with our nursery businesses in the last year? I started my permaculture design business, and I share about my first paid design. And unlike many designers who hand off the design and the tree plant list, I sold the trees and I'm doing digging the swales and doing the install as well. And one of the things we talk about in this episode is you are an expert. You're an expert at something. Even if you're not a full expert, you are more of an expert than others. That's your niche. Find your niche. Position yourself as an expert. Find your customers by speaking to yourself earlier in your journey. So like speaking to a younger you. And Grant and I dive into how to position yourself as an expert. That's this week on Thrive in the Future. Welcome to Thrive in the Future podcast. Positive solutions to help you thrive. Homesteading, gardening, community, side hustles, and building skills. Okay, welcome back to Thrive in the Future. This week, I have Grant Payne back with me again. And Grant, how's it going?
Doing good. It's been very, very good.
Yeah, so you've moved over to your land now, right?
We're still kind of, the animals are there for the most part, but we are still not living there yet.
Oh, okay.
Which that we had a fiasco with animal control, which we got caught up in a neighbor's drama. They called animal control on us, thinking it was somebody else. But another problem is there's something else we're doing in the backyard that we're considering housing that's not technically up to code. And if they were to come back, they might call code enforcement, and then we would be in a genuine problem.
So you you tried to build a tiny house out of IBC totes?
Not quite. Something to do with the RV and my sister. So I'm going to leave it at that.
Oh, yeah. We were having a conversation about that on a local board. And they got something where, you know, even if you live in an RV, then, you know, you get, yeah, if there's a house, then the RV has to be non-livable or something.
Yeah.
You can't live in both.
We got it wired and watered too. So through the house. So it looks good. I mean, everything's done up to par. I mean, we did a good job hooking it up. It looks very nice, but code enforcement is not going to like that, and they're going to see that as a payday.
Yep. So you got your IBC totes out there. You're making garden beds or raised beds, right?
Yeah, I think 15 more raised beds that we're going to do, and then I've got another 12 inside one of the greenhouses that we're going to have for more tropical stuff. I've got a landscaping job in South Alabama on the Gulf. And I bought some plants from a nursery down there on our honeymoon that I brought up here that I'm going to separate, put into totes, and try to grow and propagate that way.
Awesome.
So next spring, we'll go down and then we'll replant a lot of those and to sell them. So that is the hope on that.
So you got your consult job down there? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's just a friend of the family, honestly.
That's cool.
So still it's going to be a pretty decent job. It's going to be easily, you know, a few thousand, it's going to be like a several thousand dollar job, just because if they want it landscaped to my quality, you know, it's very hard. When I look at everything now, I look at everything landscaped.
Right.
I look at it finished, even if it's not finished. So that helps me with my job as a horticulturalist, you know, on staff. And so I can look at something and say, okay, what would I do? Ground cover, herbaceous level, shrub level, tree. And there we don't really have a budget. But when you're working with private people, you're working with people who have budgets. If they don't give you your budget up front, you don't really know how crafty you have to be.
Right.
So they make pretty good money. And what they will spend will most likely all be a tax write-off as well. So if I can get in with a commercial grower down there and have a tax ID number, I can make a pretty good chunk. But if they
That's
want
cool.
their yard landscaped, like they want some orange trees, I'll, you know, I'm they do want some orange trees. I'll probably come up with a tropical food guild and do them a couple of those. I have a pretty big backyard. It really all comes down to scale.
Sure.
I can go as big as you want me to go, or I can go as small as you want me to go. I just, you know, most people, when you ask them their budget, they're like, well, you know, I don't have one. I'm like, you do have one, and I need to know what it is so I can do
Exactly.
the best I can do. I mean, I can take $200 and I can stretch it as far as I can stretch it and make it work to its capacity.
Right. Yeah, that's one of the things that people have a hard time with that I've learned doing this permaculture design stuff is that at some point you have to have the conversation on what's your budget, because I think people go, "Whoa, well, you're going to try and run it all the way up to the budget." No, it helps set the scale for what we're in the scope for what we're doing, right? If I put in a whole bunch of plants and I add a whole bunch more trees, and then that's, and then I tell you what that costs. And then we're starting off on the wrong spot. So yeah, let me tell you a story. So I had my first permaculture paid design at his rural property up here in Northeast Kansas.
The one we've been talking about.
He's got a 3-acre pasture down at the bottom of his land. It doesn't have water infrastructure, nothing like that. But he wants to have nut trees, fruit trees, and he wants to have low maintenance. He said, "I hear you have a system for doing that." So I said, "Yeah, sure." So I did a full design and complete with a water assessment, soil map. I mapped out the sun for the different places. I found a chestnut tree in his pasture that he didn't know was there. He didn't know what it was.
How much did
And
you
then
charge for just the assessment?
so there's an assessment where you go out, and you walk around and stuff, and I charge him a couple hundred bucks for that. And then to do a design with what I'm talking about, in most places they will give you all those things I talked about. And then they'll give you a plant list and a layout,
So like
and
a
then
yeah, like a true landscape design,
sure,
like
it's
officially.
basically a landscape design, but with
I get what you
permaculture
mean.
assessment, right? So mine, since it's my first one, I'm working on my PDC. I'll have my PDC done by Thanksgiving, and I'm taking it through Midwest Permaculture, which I really like because they do all the PDC stuff. What I'm seeing is some people won't deal with me unless I have the cert. But one of the things I like about their program is that they constantly have entrepreneurial ideas in there. And I'm like sitting there going, "Hey, I could do that." Like one examples they had was these two ladies will come into your yard and they will do a complete garden, set up all the hoses and everything else, plant, harvest everything. It's like having your own CSA in your backyard. No work on your own part. You don't have to go out there and water. You don't have to go out there and harvest. You don't have to go out there and pull any weeds. They'll do the whole thing for $1,600 a year. And that was probably 10 years ago. So,
Wow, that's cool.
and
I hear ideas like that, and I'm like, that sounds cool, but I
yeah,
just
and
don't
I'm
know
like,
I don't know
dang.
if that's something that I could do.
Well,
Like, I
see,
don't
and
know.
that's the whole thing. So it's like, what can you do? So
And also, what would you enjoy? What would you want to do?
exactly.
How
So,
well can you set up that garden and stay under that $1,600 and still be good?
exactly. So it's like, and this is another thing. So I've got multiple flows. I've got the nut trees. I've got a permaculture design business that's taken off. Most permaculture designers, they don't supply the trees and they don't do the implementation. So they hand off the design and they hand off the tree list and the plant list and they say, "Here you go," right? So a lot of people go, "Well, what do I do now?" And then they can send them to me and I can get, or you, and we can get the plants, right? So then one of the questions was, "Okay, will you do the implementation if I, if Apple guy at the Apple nursery, we're having a conversation on whether, if he sends people to me, will I go and install the trees for him and stuff. So we're having discussions like that. So though, once again, you get to what do you want to do?
Right. It almost makes zero sense to not do the insulation and sell them the plants. I mean, if you are producing the plants for the guild you design, your guilds are going to revolve around the crops and plants you grow that you will then install. It doesn't really make sense to do this, 3 to 5 acre permaculture design and not jump on that installation.
Correct. But the funny thing was, and this is the part of the story that's interesting, is every step along the way, we were completely on board, and I designed it like I would do it, right? And your client won't know what they want often. So you say, hey, what do you want? Yes, that sounds good. What do you want? Yes, that sounds good. Okay. And then what kind of apple trees do you want? I don't know. You make a, you know, they, you are the expert and you make the recommendations. So
And
then,
I'm sorry, I hate to interrupt you so much, but
no, that's fine.
that is the cool thing. So I'm officially graduated. I have an associate's in general horticulture, floral management, and landscape management. I am officially educated. So it feels really cool because
Well, there you go.
my floral design teacher, he told us, like, as soon as you graduate, you are the expert. You become the expert immediately. So it doesn't really matter what level of knowledge you have, you're the expert.
So yeah, so this is where it gets funny, because so I designed it because, he gave me the high level thing. I want to have 2/3 fruit, 1/3 nuts. He already has a chestnut, so I have to put in a couple of chestnuts so they'll pollinate, right? And then we got some hazelnuts and stuff like that. But there's some apples, there's some pears, and I had it laid out. I had it laid out in guilds. And but you always have to also ask who's the decider, who's the decision maker in here besides you. And I delivered the design, and then his spouse said, well, I don't like this. So then we got on a Zoom call, so then I said, okay. She goes, I don't want trees on the north part of this, north of this halfway point, because I want it for camping. I want it for family events. Okay, that's good to know. So then I asked her, what do you see when you drive in the driveway? Because this is the first thing you see when you drive in the driveway. What do you see? And she said, yeah, the guilds you're showing me and the pictures you're showing me, I can't picture them, and they look messy to me, because I design guilds where they're from top to bottom, like the edge of a forest,
Yeah,
right?
how you're supposed to.
Right. Well, that's not what she wanted. So she said, when I drive in, I want to see rows. Okay, so now I
You don't
changed the
want,
design.
like, she doesn't want fruit guilds. She wants organized agriculture,
Well, no,
almost.
yeah, she wants rows, which is fine. I mean, a lot of permaculture designs are that way. So I changed the design, and now it has swales, and there are fruit trees on the swales with nut trees in between. But part of it was saying, what does Xanadu look like to you? You drive into your driveway, you look over here, what does the perfect situation look like to you? And then and that a year ago, I'm not sure I could have done that, because I've always designed my businesses based on what I like, right? Assuming that my customers like me, and that's not always the case. So we did that, and they approved the design, and now I'm going over there to start the work tomorrow.
That's fantastic. I'm
Yeah,
that's
it's
some
super
It makes
awesome.
me
I'm
so
gonna have to
happy.
get me a I'm gonna have to get me an ex I'm gonna have to rent me an excavator. You can rent an excavator at Home Depot for $350 for the entire day. Dang. So, I gotta rent an excavator, probably not this weekend, because the 811 guys haven't got out there yet to mark everything. I don't think there's anything running through that field, but you never know. And so I've got chestnuts, hazelnuts, I've got bush cherries, I've got blackberries, and what else? And comfrey, and then apples. And this is where being the expert comes in again, is they've got cedars along the edge of the pasture, which is usually a huge problem for apples because you get cedar apple rust, right?
Exactly. That is going to be my biggest problem at the farm is there are
Me,
so
mine's
many
mine right
seed
now.
there's so many cedars everywhere. And if it were me, I would eradicate every single cedar I see because they mean nothing to me. I don't like evergreens. I'm a very big fan of deciduous trees. I'm just not a fan of evergreens, specifically because we have bagworms. And like I was like that's why I love bald cypress is because they're a deciduous tree that has the appeal of an evergreen in the spring,
That's interesting.
like your cedars and whatnot. Bald
Sure.
cypress have those fine little needles and they look like
Oh,
a
yeah,
Christmas
okay.
tree in the spring, but then they lose all their needles in the fall.
I see. Yeah, so all of the places around here, and even if you eradicated it from your land, there's cedars in the taking over pastures next door, right?
Yeah,
So,
it's impossible, especially when you have neighbors that
right.
have the
So
exact same amount.
I had to get with the apple guy and say, okay, what apples do you recommend? I asked the landowner, the person I'm the client. I said, what kind of apples do you want? He said, you're the expert. You make the recommendations based on this, what's resistant to cedar apple rust. So I got with the apple guy, and who I have a real good relationship with. I've bought apples and scions and rootstock and everything from him since 2016, and every year. And so we have an agreement where he doesn't sell nuts and I don't sell apples. And then so I'm going to buy them from him and then install them. So we had to go through the list and say, okay, which one of these are the most cedar apple rust? Let's get a variety of different apples. And then I presented that on the design. So, and then I'll go and start laying out things with the A-frame tomorrow for the contours.
Awesome.
So, yeah, have you used an A-frame before?
For what?
For marking out the contours in the pasture.
No.
Well, that's cool. So, I mean, basically, you got this wood. Basically, it's like a triangle, and then it's got a plumb bob on a string in the middle, and then you use that. And as long as the plumb bob is in the middle, then you can trace out where you are, and you can map out the contours on your land. And then you can use it to, so I've got the contours marked out from the software, but now I need to go and do them in real life. So then this I can back it up with this A-frame and then mark it out with some wood stakes, and then come back and do some digging once he gets the okay from the 811 guys. So yeah, it's pretty cool. So I'm gonna do that tomorrow. Get some wood chips and some compost out there, and just get everything set up to go.
Now, are you charging him for the compost and the wood mulch? Awesome. Yeah. So I had my first big landscaping job that I did a couple weeks ago. Same
Really?
people, the same people who want me to do their house in Gulf Shores. The same people who gave me the 12 days at their house in Gulf Shores for the honeymoon. So
Really?
we went, and I was like, "What?" They didn't really know what they wanted. Their biggest criteria is they wanted urine resistant plants because they have three outside dogs that will pee on everything.
I see.
So I went with the hardiest. I got Dwarf Nandina, which I typically hate, but when
Dwarf
you look
what?
at Dwarf Nandina, like, do you know what Nandina is?
No. You
Okay.
got different biome trees over there than I
Well,
have.
yeah, it's a it, they're it's an invasive. So it's
Okay.
a Japanese basically invasive bamboo.
Oh.
And there's one version that has berries, and the berries are toxic to birds and everything. But when you look at Nandina from a permaculture mindset, you can cut Nandina down every single year and chip it or mulch it, compost it, and it'll bush right back out in the spring.
Cool.
It'll bush back out before spring, and then it'll stay green during winter. It's extreme, and especially if you have established root systems. And even if you have the Nandina that goes 8 to 10 feet tall, you cut it down every year, you've got a 2 to 3 foot tall bush. So if it gets too scraggly, if it gets out of control, if it doesn't look good, all you have to do, cut it flat to the ground and it will completely reshape itself. So the dwarf Nandina is sterile, it doesn't produce berries, and it won't spread. So I got
Yeah,
that.
you don't want to produce in the toxic berries with those dogs around.
Yeah.
So
And
just you got to make sure that I mean, do dogs eat leaves
they
and stuff?
do,
Will they
but
gnaw and stuff?
there are so many things that dogs can eat that are toxic,
Yeah.
even in a native environment. It's not my responsibility to make sure your dog doesn't eat it. It's just not.
That's funny.
I didn't specifically get things that were toxic to dogs.
Right. Okay.
But
So then, yeah, this is cool.
the quantities of that you have to eat is probably a lot
Yeah,
more
sure.
than it's gonna do. And then I did gardenias and I did golden ligustrum, which is privet.
Now, will gardenias come back? Are they perennial? Will they come back every
Yeah,
year?
they're a perennial shrub.
Oh,
So
okay.
they're just a shrub, have beautiful smelling flowers. And
Wait
then
a
I
minute,
did
privet is
exact
like what
yeah,
you're trying to get rid of.
Chinese privet, ligustrum. So, but it's also a sterile privet. It doesn't flower, it doesn't berry.
Oh, yeah,
So
okay.
it won't sexually reproduce. And the same thing with ligustrum is it's extremely hard. It's you can pee on it and it's not you're not gonna hurt it. It's a very hardy plant. And if you
Right.
have a problem with it, cut it to the ground and just do a restoration prune. Like if it doesn't look good in 6 years from now, cut it to the ground and it will reshape itself. And then I did a lot of Lysimachia, which is creeping Jenny, and then I did some Mondo grass. A whole
Cool.
lot of your standard run-of-the-mill, landscaping stuff, but it looks good. It looks nice. I did some Liriope, Muscari, and it's just ornamental variegated grasses and stuff like that. That is all extremely hardy. It's hard to kill, and that's what he wanted. He wanted zero maintenance, hard to kill, dog proof. So unless the dog digs it up, that's as dog proof as you can get. But we did that, and he dug the holes for us. He brought out his skid steer to dig the holes for the shrubs,
Oh, that's great.
which was completely unnecessary. I would have had them dug and planted before he finished digging the holes.
Know. I'm happy about stuff like that
His
because it just goes on and I got super hard clay.
auger is the same diameter as mine,
Yeah.
and I can just this I ha I bought the Ryobi battery powered auger.
Yeah.
It is fantastic. I even talked my boss to get it for us at work. I love it. It is absolutely fantastic because you just go in, you just punch a hole. It's not like you're digging it 4 feet deep every single time. So if you're digging a 10-inch hole, you can probably dig 80 holes before you're out of battery.
Really?
Yeah.
So what, you use an auger?
Yeah, I do. So it's just big enough to take like a 6-inch pot and just sit it in the ground.
I see.
I mean, you're technically supposed to dig it 2.5 times the width of the pot and everything like that. But when you're dealing with perennial root vegetable, like perennial root crops or perennial root plants, they're not going to really spread out that much that fast. Even if you were to have the perfect size hole, they're not going to grow their roots fast enough to overtake that. So it's just not necessary. Especially when you're planting, plants out of a 2 gallon pot. When I'm planting a 2 gallon plant, it already has an established root system that it's just going to sit into the ground. I'm going to put dirt under it, dirt around it, mulch it in, and it'll sort itself out in the spring, next spring.
Okay.
Because, so it looks good. Their problem is it was like he wanted it to be a certain height and everything. And I feel like we did a pretty good job for what we did. We actually ended up, we did our math wrong. We didn't do our multiplication right when it comes to our markup. So they ended up getting
Oh,
more.
no.
We did a 2 times markup instead of a 3 times markup. So, which I didn't mind by the time we were done. It looked good. I was extremely happy with it. And, They helped. They gave us a 12-day stay at their house in Gulf Shores. I'm not going to complain for that.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And even now in landscaping, everything, I'm designing everything with that permaculture mindset, even at work. When we like, and even going diving deeper into that is what me and Shudra have been talking about so much, is all the different plant families and how they work together,
Yeah.
to basically be unlimited for basically unlimited fertility is essentially what it is, which I'm going to incorporate that into my raised beds exponentially. I'm probably going to have 8 to 9 plant families per raised bed, and half of it will probably be perennial crops that are just for mulch. But yeah.
Cool. Yeah, so you're well on your way as well. So, we get cross-pollinating, and then if anybody contacts me and they're over in your region, or then I send them to you and
Yeah.
vice versa. Yeah,
It
because I'm not really interested in doing stuff for this out of my biome, right? I mean,
right.
or my region. So I understand Kansas, Missouri, Iowa, and Eastern Nebraska. Oklahoma starts getting a little too much like Texas. And, and then, I mean, I could do it, but, one of the things that sets me apart is that I understand Kansas and that we don't get April showers bring May flowers.
Yeah.
We get crazy, thunderstorms,
That's like
and it ain't
when
gonna work, right?
we went to Gulf Shores, it's tropical, man.
Yeah.
I mean, so there's stuff down there that we plant up here as annuals that are perennials there. So I feel confident that I could plant a tropical like permaculture guild like that is because on Twitter, Cowboy Dog, he does his spaces. And there's so many people in that little group that live in Florida and do permaculture guilds. I can kind of steal ideas from, and then I can just figure the rest out. Is it can't be that hard to figure out how to companion plant with citrus.
Yeah, cool. So we'll get that figured out and we'll go. So what's new? Last year we were talking about trees, plants, and flowers and how to propagate them for free and then sell the extras as a side hustle. That was episode 105. That's one of the highest downloaded episodes. It scores one of the highest on Google SEO. So what are our lessons learned? What do you have lessons learned since last year? What have you
Lesson
learned that
learned.
blows your mind since last year?
And this might be a little bit crude to say, the biggest lesson I have learned is that the consumer is not as smart as you want them to be.
Right.
So I got married in May. We grew all the plant material for the wedding ourselves.
Yep.
So it was absolutely stunning. We had hundreds of hostas. That was kind of, our thing. So we got these hostas, bought these hostas for $4 a piece. These are $15 plants. There are about 8 or 9 individual hostas in each plant. So I took them out of their pot. I put them in a 2 gallon pot, which almost doubled, if not more than doubled, their space. So then they grew to be in the size pot that they were in.
Right.
So they now have 10 to 12 plants per 2 gallon pot.
Wow.
So you and if you go to Lowe's or Home Depot, the hostas you're going to see at Lowe's or Home Depot, they only have one plant per pot, and they're selling them for $12 a piece.
Right.
So I was selling those 2 gallon pots of hostas. They are mature plants that will probably double in size if you put them in the ground now, next spring. I was selling
But
them
you
for
got
20.
like six in there, right?
There's more than that. There's like 10 or 12 stalks, which each stalk for a hosta is an individual plant.
Right. So you sell it for, what did you say?
I was selling them for $25 a piece. Nobody wanted them.
$25 for a 2 gallon pot.
Yeah.
And then they'll have the equivalent of whatever, 60, right?
Yeah.
Of $60 worth of hostas.
Basically, yeah.
If they
If
and what
not
happened?
more, nobody bought them.
Why?
No, I got messages asking, if it was $25 for all of them. No, $25 a piece. These are 3-year-old plants. They're
Yeah.
in 2-gallon pots.
Right.
This has dozens of leaf, and one leaf is as big as my hand.
Yep.
I got in, and a lady messaged me and then argued with me about my pricing and how she got one at Lowe's that's bigger. She got one at Lowe's 2 years ago that's bigger than the ones I have. Like, of course you do. It's in the ground.
Yeah.
I'm like, but people don't, they didn't seem to understand the value.
Sure.
I
Well,
want
part of
it.
that is also because we've gotten into the Craigslist, Facebook, and now eBay does the same thing where, that price is not real. It's the starting price, and you goes and you and everybody assumes you're going to haggle.
Yeah.
And I'm like, haggle
Next
is a
time,
waste of my time.
I will probably double the price. Because my teacher in class, he would always say, he would sell things like wreaths when he was in. He taught for Cornell or wherever he went to school. He taught their
Yeah.
horticulture program, and so they would make wreaths for floral design. Like they would hand make live wreaths. And they were selling for $5 a piece. Nobody would buy them. He started selling them for $30 a piece. They couldn't make them fast enough.
Yeah,
So,
perceived value.
right. So, I sold some. I had some family come out and buy some. He's a hosta freak. He loves hostas. He has so I didn't know that, but we kept them all. I was like, you know what? Screw this. I'll keep them all. Next spring, I'll divide up each plant. I'll put one plant per 1 gallon pot. I'll
Yep.
grow them out. I'll sell them for
That's what you
$10 a
do.
piece.
That's what you do.
If you want a smaller product for a cheaper price, that's fine. I'll do it. And that's probably for the best. I just really kind of wanted to get them going so they didn't die.
Sure.
Trying to juggle all that during winter, it gets risky. Yeah, it was kind of defeating, but because I bought all the dirt, I bought all the pots, I potted them all up and expecting to sell them because, these things look freaking amazing. This is a $60 to $70 plant right here. You could take it home, cut it into 4 pieces, and you're going to have 4 of these exact plants next spring.
Yep.
So, like, you're going to have for $60, you're going to end up with a few $100 worth of plants, which I understand this is, it's, landscaping is technically a luxury. But I almost have decided to keep a lot of those hostas and work them into my permaculture guilds and even my garden beds. Because that's just a perennial plant in a different plant family to boost to that endless fertility that will create top mulch, and the leaves and roots are completely edible.
Really? Oh,
So
they
if
are edible?
they are edible. Hostas are edible.
Are
Canna
they
lilies
chop
are
and drop
edible.
then, or what do you?
Yeah, I probably would chop them and feed them to the rabbits.
Oh, yeah,
Take
there you
that
go.
manure, put it back into the garden.
Yep.
Canna lilies, they're edible. Day lilies are edible. So you can build these permaculture guilds that are edible, but also decorative.
Yeah, exactly.
I intend to incorporate a lot of daylilies and even canna lilies into my raised beds because my raised beds are 12 square feet. Each one is 12 square feet. So if I have 100, I've got 1,200 square feet of raised beds. I could put one daylily, one canna lily, one hosta, in each raised bed, and I can still plant, all my vegetable crop. They're not going to take up that much space. But I can also use them. You can use the hosta to help, keep the soil covered. If I get like my native violets that are also perennial, the leaves are medicinal, the flowers are medicinal. So it's not like I'm taking up space with things that I couldn't eat if I had to.
Right.
And so that's probably going to be my biggest thing this year is that I'm essentially starting my garden over. And
Wow.
I'm starting it over at like a 10 times scale. So
I
I'm
like
going
how
to be.
you got me turned on to figs.
Yeah. And I still got those. I'm letting them try to dry out a little bit more before I ship them because I don't want them to be so heavy. But as soon as you get those, put those in like a 1 or 2 gallon pot. Let them grow out for you in your greenhouse,
Right.
and then see how those work, and see if they're able to produce anything after. If not, you just use them as, just, I don't know. However, but eventually, if they do work in your area, you can start adding those into the guilds because they're just so easy to propagate.
Yep. Yeah, one of the things that I like that I learned this year, mainly because you gave me a recommendation on the nursery book, right? Is that all nurseries
Which
sell,
nursery book? The
I don't know,
19th edition Ball Red book?
the standard, what's it called?
The nursery
American
standard.
standard for nursery stock, which is funny because it's from 1996,
They
but
have not made a new one since 1996.
So basically all of the nurseries are charging based on pot size, right? 1 gallon pot, 2 gallon pot, 3 gallon, whatever. Or they're charging, if it's bigger, if it's a tree, then they charge based on caliper, which is the thickness of the branch. They grade it based on how far it is up to the first branches. And then are they also, instead of a pot size, they would grade it based on the size of the root ball. So that's been helpful to reach my price point on trees, and especially on elderberry, because now I can go over to the local nurseries, and they all pretty much sell elderberry in a 1 gallon or 2 gallon pot for a specific price. And everybody's pretty much the same, right? So I know where I'm at. I know where I can start. I know what the market will bear, and then I can compete with them
The
that way.
crazy thing is I still don't have one of those nursery standard books.
Well, it doesn't really. I mean, it's 96, so it doesn't give the price, of course, because that would be wrong. But
You would
it
have
goes
to do
through and it
some like
shows everything.
serious adjustment.
Oh yeah. But basically, I went and I got the I went and I got the price list from the two nurseries that I deal with mostly, and that I consider my competition locally. And they're pretty much selling. They're selling based on pot size, and they have a consistent price. For elderberry is $17 for a 1 gallon pot, and $15 to $17 for a 1 gallon pot, and about $30 to $32 for a 2 gallon pot. So right there, I know what to sell it for, right? And then and stuff. So yeah, then you start using the lingo, and yeah, that was very helpful, and it also helps you to understand, where they're coming from as well. And then you can buy elderberry, take cuttings from it later.
And that's been like the biggest thing for me is I look at value in everything so much. It's almost ruined my capability to buy something because I know the value of this plant. I know how much the plug cost. I know how much the pot cost. I know how much the dirt cost, and I know your markup. So some of the plants they're selling now, they're either at a 2x markup or they're getting their stuff extremely cheap.
Well, yeah.
So some of these bigger places are getting, extreme discounts on, but just by buying in bulk.
Well, a
But
lot of places are, buying from the state conservation.
yeah, I just mean more so like the annual plants.
But I mean, from like trees and stuff, they're buying from the
Yeah.
state conservation and then
And
growing them out.
that's what I really want to start doing is I'm fixing to place an order if I've got to sit down and talk about it with my wife and see if she thinks we can handle it. But I'm fixing to order 500 more trees.
Good Lord.
So it's going to be 100 red mulberries just
Wow.
because, red mulberries, it's a native mulberry tree. I mean, that's also looked to be planted in pastures and coppiced as tree hay.
Tree hay.
25 witch hazels, 50 Kentucky coffee bean trees. I've never heard of it. It looks cool. It looks like I probably could talk people into buying it.
Yeah, I don't know though. I remember looking at the Kentucky coffee tree, and there was some sort of aversion to it. It was either toxic for some reason or something like that.
If it's toxic, I need to look into it more. If it's toxic, that kind of defeats the purpose of getting
Yeah, I didn't.
it.
I yeah. So I was like, I can't get this. So there were two things I looked at. One was that, and then I couldn't plant it anywhere around the horses, right? So
Which
that
I have
sucks.
goats and cows, so they might be able to eat it versus the
Well,
horses.
goats can eat anything.
They can
So
eat a lot of
I mean,
stuff.
they'll eat stupid stuff, but it was definitely a do not have this around horses thing. And
Okay.
so that's why I didn't get that. There was one other one, I can't remember what it was, that it was the same type of thing. And it was like, yep, you don't want to have this around. And I was like excited. Oh yeah, it was black cherry. I mean, I was like
Oh,
gung
yeah.
ho on black cherry, and I was like,
Yeah.
oh, this is awesome. And then it says no,
So
the
black
lead.
cherry is, if it's just like your native black cherry, if goats can eat the leaves green, but if they dry in any form, well, they can eat the leaves completely dry, but they cannot eat the leaves in their wilted state. It's poisonous.
And then for it'd be more impact on horses than goats.
Yeah, and if I'm
So,
not mistaken, you can't even eat the berries. Like
right.
the fruit it produces is not a human edible
Oh,
cherry.
okay. Yeah, I thought it was, but that's like I got some verbenum, bush cherry, bush cranberry,
Yeah.
and it says it's edible, but I'm not so sure. So we're gonna see.
So
So,
I'll look into the coffee tree a little more. I'm debating on getting pecans.
really.
We can grow pecans here. My only thing is it going to be a production worthy pecan, or should I just throw more of my space in the chestnuts? That's I'm kind of feeling more chestnuts and hazelnuts than pecans.
I think pecans, anything that, so pecans are related to hickories, and hickories are slow as heck.
Okay, then I'll probably take the pecans off. I was, we
And they
have a lot.
also have a big, huge spread,
Yeah.
so they'll take up more of your pasture, but they won't get there for a while.
Okay. And
Whereas
then,
chestnuts will bear within 5 years.
wow. That's so. And then I was going to get 100 persimmons. So I've got 25 witch hazel, 100 persimmons, 100 red mulberries, 25 river birch, just because I think that would look pretty along the creek. If I'm not mistaken, you can do stuff with the bark. I was going to get 25 rosemallow, 25 sandbar willows, and then 50
Yeah, so the
sage.
rosemallow are the her hibiscus rose, right?
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, I got those, and the only problem with those is that they spread really fast.
Well, see, for
So,
me, that's okay for me is because, anything I have that spreads fast or I too far, I just got to get the goats on it or the
yeah,
pigs on it.
goats would love it. Yeah, there's no question of goats would
And
love it, and it's
then,
pretty.
yeah, and then
It's
the
pretty at
service.
parts of the, it's pretty in like August when nothing else
Yeah.
is pretty.
And then, like, the 50 service berries because I'm getting such high quantities for, like, the mulberries, the service berries, and the persimmons is because I can put those in pots and just turn around and resell them for, like, 10
Yeah,
bucks next year.
service berries, like we were talking about in IM, service berries are an alternative, a non-invasive alternative to autumn olive, and then they're a little bit more sweeter than autumn olive. So I love autumn olive, I love it, and but service berry, it's hard to get autumn olive, and
Yeah.
even though I'm
So,
trying to grow some from cuttings, so we'll see.
yeah, Eleagnus. We have Eleagnus here, which is that's what autumn olive is. But we have a invasive Eleagnus here that is a non-berry producing Eleagnus. Like it doesn't prolifically produce a bunch of fruit. We had a problem with that. I let the goats get in there. We don't have a problem with it anymore. I just love goats, and I'm trying to lean more into silvopasture and forest, grazing than pasture, period. And just diversifying the pastures with with trees and more stuff like that, especially tree hay. You got so many maples. I've been pollarding and coppicing these maples. I mean, they're 40-year-old trees that I'm cutting to a stump. Within 2 weeks, they're a 4 foot tall bush again. So all I got to do is let them come in. They don't, the thing is they won't eat the sticks completely. So they'll leave some sticks. So it'll just bush back out again. And these root systems are already so old. I can probably just keep coming back and coming back, and eventually they will adapt to being cut back every year. And I have pretty much a forever source of mulberry, not mulberry, but maple leaves, maple tree form. And that's within their pasture area.
Cool.
And I've been doing the exact same thing with black walnuts because there's, we have where we are, there are a ridiculous amount of black walnut trees and then a ridiculous amount of shagbark hickory trees.
Oh yeah, I love
So
shagbark hickory, but dang, they're slow.
we've got some that are enormous. They're huge. But I was thinking about planting an acre of the black walnuts, and then doing like a mixed cover crop of like chicory, dock, plantain, and clover, and then running pigs and goats on it, and just basically using it as a timber crop for 50 years. And if I don't cut it for timber, I've got nuts, so I can still run the pigs on that silvopasture. So that's one thing. And the thing is about it, I'm only going to grow those trees from nuts I collect on our property, which, in my opinion, is going to be even better. Because some of these trees, the original black walnut on that property, it's, oh my gosh, I can't tell you how big the trunk is, but I can pretty much guarantee you that it's one of the oldest trees that has grown, multiple generations of the trees. So we're, it's really, really cool.
Don't you have to be careful though with you don't want the black walnuts too close to the chestnuts.
That is true. In most places, it's all on the hillside, so it's pretty much nowhere where we would put chestnuts. That's pretty much it.
So where are you getting the chestnuts from?
Well, I got the seeds you sent me. I've got the
Yep.
5 trees you sent me. So
Right.
far, that's all I have.
Yeah, so one of the things you want to look for is one of the lessons that I've learned this year is that people have an aversion, customers have an aversion to Chinese chestnut, which is funny because I mean pretty much everything's Chinese chestnut, but
Is there
they
any reason why?
I haven't figured out why, just
Is it
that
because it
it's
has Chinese in the name?
Yeah, there's some aversion that it's not American, it's not hybrid, it's got small nuts, all this other stuff, right? So then there's Dunstan, which is a hybrid between American chestnut and Chinese chestnut, but you can't use Dunstan, you can't use the name because it's TM.
Okay.
Everybody pretty much uses the name anyway. So one of the things I'm doing is so this year it was really funny because I sprout my chestnuts out in sand in buckets in the garage during the
Yeah.
wintertime. And we had snow for 3 weeks in January, and it drifted across the driveway like three times because of wind, but the somehow I got under the garage door and seeped up into the buckets and rotted my chestnuts. I don't know how. I don't know what the deal was, but I went to go take them out. They were all rotten from top to bottom, like, 15 buckets full of chestnuts.
Let me ask you a question because I think I might have. Do you bury your chestnuts on the ground?
No. You can. So one of the ways you
Okay.
do it. One of the ways you do it is you put it in buckets of sand and then you bury them in the ground or you cover them up with something so they're underground, right? I don't do that. I usually put them in buckets of sand and then put them in the garage. And then the but this year for some reason that didn't work. So I had to get some more chestnuts. I had to buy some off eBay. I got some Dunstan chestnuts and they were bigger than the regular chestnuts and they did really well and they just sold like crazy. So I'm going down to the chestnut farm. They're done with their regular harvest that they sell to grocery stores, and they
Oh,
have 2 days
yeah.
of U-pick. And the guy said that the only chestnuts that are left are the ones that are the hybrids. So
Oh, that's really good.
they're the biggest chestnuts, and I can't get them from the grocery store because they're treated, because they treat them
Yeah.
before they send to the grocery store. But he's got U-pick, so I'm going to go down there
Oh, that'd be really, really awesome.
and get a whole bunch of them, if I can on Saturday and Sunday. And then and he said that most of the ones that are left are the ones that are coming off of the hybrid trees, and they're tend to be larger chestnuts. So
Awesome. That sounds really, really fun.
that's my plan to sprout those out for next year, and then kind of get around the because everybody wants those kind of hybrids.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if I will ever get to production enough all my chestnuts to sell them. Grow the nut out. I pretty much just want it for personal use for
Sure, yeah. There you go. I
So
mean,
that's, my biggest thing is to be able to build the property. I will probably, and this is another thing, is my boss, he offered to help me build a tree farm, like a to grow oaks and maples and, trees, excuse me, that would be dug up and planted, around. He's in with Georgia Power, so Georgia
Sure.
Power calls him, contracts him to go out and find trees for them to replant. When they cut down trees, they have to come back and they have to replant trees sometimes.
Yep.
So they'll pay him like so much per tree. And he's like, he said that he could then come to me and then buy the trees from me. And he said he would grade everything, help me get everything set up for free on an
Wow.
acre and on an acre and a half, mind you.
That's pretty
So
good.
if I can logistically figure out how to, build and sustain an acre and a half tree farm on, a poor man's budget while I'm trying to start three other businesses, I would be down.
That's cool.
Because, well, we've got the nursery business, which we've got the nurseries, the greenhouses up. We've got to get them finished and plastic on them. And then next spring, we're going to make greenhouse, basically make it ourselves. We're going to get a bend, we're going to get a pipe bender, and we're going to just bend the pipe and extend each greenhouse out 50 more feet. So we're going to start with three 14 by 50 foot greenhouses, and then we're going to finish off that year with three 100 by 14s, and then go from there. Start the nursery business, do pastured meat, get into direct to consumer meat business.
That'd be cool.
That is probably going to be where a lot of the money comes from, as far as selling chickens. And then me and a friend, my cowboy dog in South Georgia, we are going to look to start and breed a new composite breed of pig. And we're going to call it the Georgia Forestry Pig. So I'm really
Wow.
excited to do that. We've got kind of gotten the percentages we want that we think would produce the best pig. I will have a specific percentage to breed, and then he will breed to a specific percentage. Then we meet together and breed our percentages together and get the final product.
Yeah, Purpin and
So,
I had a plan where we would rotate roosters,
yeah.
and you'd have a rooster rotation system between us and people that were raising chicks at the church and stuff. And then you don't have daddy and children, chickens mating
Yeah.
on down the road.
Yeah. So we're, because he's had pigs his whole life. I've had goats my whole life, not really pigs. But if we can get electric fencing up, we should have a lot better, ways to manage that. We're getting four more cows Saturday. I'm actually getting one for him. I'm getting another heifer for me. And then we're buying two bulls we're going to steer before we leave their property this weekend, because one of them is a year old. He's a year old Longhorn. He was born in February, so he knows he's not a year yet, but by the time we're ready to process him, he will be a year old. So you really can't beat an 8 month old bull for $400.
Wow.
You can't beat that price. I mean, we're gonna take him, feed him hay, feed him grain, just and grow him out and basically eat him in 4 months.
Wow.
So I personally don't feel like you can beat that. And then we have the goats that we're going to breed at the end of next month, and then we're going to put our bull in with our heifers at the end of next month. So I'm overstocked a little bit because there was, that stuff going on a few weeks ago where the stock market was going dumb. So I was like, I would rather have cows than Bitcoin. So that's what I went ahead and I cashed that out and got a bull. Because, I was more worried about the Japanese stock market because it went crazy. It dropped like 26 to 30 points in 2 days. Monday dropped like 15. Tuesday it dropped like another 12, and then it opened up Wednesday morning up 10%.
That's crazy.
It is very crazy. So, we're living, and if you look at everything that's happened in the past week, it just keeps getting crazier and crazier.
Oh
And
yeah, and that's the whole thing. I mean, the election's not going to go well.
no, it's not. And
And
I would
no
rather
one's going to,
be
neither side's going to accept the results
no.
if they
And
lose.
that's where, if it comes to it, we have 180 acres next door that's fenced.
That's
That's
awesome.
our neighbor's property. That if we run out of hay, hell it'll look. If things get so bad where our cow, like where we have to, basically go back to a point where we're shepherding our animals 24/7, things are a little different. So I found some cheap hay. There are 4x5 bales for $25 a piece. They say if I get 50, they said they'll do them for $20 a piece. So I can get 50 bales of hay for $1,000.
How are you going to move all those? Do you got a
Trailer.
trailer?
Yeah, we got a
You...
24-foot trailer. They said they
Oh, there
load
you
them for
go.
us. They're
Yeah.
14 minutes down the road. So
Dang.
I can take that biomass, put it straight into my pastures, feed my guys. I'm going to keep feeding them grain just because I don't want to risk it with them. I just don't. But then by next spring, we're going to have 13 to 14 more acres fenced off, and they'll be golden. And then we won't have a stocking issue for a very long time. And then by the time we might have a stocking issue, we're going to have 17 more acres fenced, and then 5 more that we've been given permission to use. We just
That's
gotta
cool.
we just have to check the barbed wire fence. And parents are meeting with the guy tomorrow to start digging the basement so we can start getting the house finished to actually move up there. So it's things are going really good. We've been very busy. A lot's been happening, and the whole like a lot of stuff has been put on pause, or not really pause, but just slowing down a little bit. You know my pace more than most people. I feel like I'm not getting anything done. But at the same time, when you sit back and look on it, we're getting a lot done. It's just not at my preferred speed.
Yeah, I know your preferred speed is like I still don't understand how you tolerate being a city employee.
I don't. I hate it. I really hate it. But my max pay is $40 an hour. After like 30 years, I'll be making $40 an hour without even trying. So if I do try, I might work my way into a superintendent's position. I might have a little more leeway, a little less work. So, which I don't know how I have even, I hopefully it gives me more work. But the city does not know what they want us to do yet.
Right.
We have not been given any truly official job titles. My official job title is landscaper. They refer to me as the city horticulturalist. So,
Wow.
that's it. They don't know yet. They have an idea of where they want this to go, but is it going to happen? I don't know. I'm giving it 7 years. I may give it 10 years because then my pension will be vested, and then I might get like $500 a month when I retire. But my goal,
After only 10 years? Are you sure?
no, I don't really know at all.
Yeah, but yeah.
I'm fully vested at 25 years,
Right.
but my whole entire goal is to build something where I don't have to work.
Me too. I'm my whole goal is.
I'm trying to build something where I don't need a 401k. I don't need Social Security. That's in my opinion, that's the whole goal. And there have been more times than I have ever thought about quitting my job, selling everything I own, and moving to an island
Right.
in Alaska with Alaska guy. I have thought about that so much.
Oh, the guy,
Or Guy Alaska.
Alaska. And yeah, the funny thing is, he's like on Kodiak Island or whatever, where it doesn't really get all that cold.
Right. I'm like, dude, I would totally do that. If I could bring my goats and I could bring my cows, there's family issues why I can't go. But if I was a single guy, I would jump on that. I would get in a serious call with him, be like, look, okay, let's do this. I'll do 6 months of free labor if you feed me and house me. I'll stay for 6 months and see if I can commit to that.
Well, he's looking for a midwife here.
He
If
is he is
Destiny can
looking
do
for it.
him, if
I don't
Destiny can be a
Destiny,
midwife.
can you be a midwife?
Sure. We'll
So
go to Alaska.
yeah. So I mean, I would love to do that because then you're cut off from you don't have to have power. You don't have to have any of these things. You're forced to go back to all right, you wake up every morning and you go get stuff done.
Yeah.
The probably the worst part about the job is coming home and being mentally drained versus being
Yep.
physically
Yep.
tired.
My big problem is I'm trading time for money,
We
and it's
all are.
increasingly not worth it.
Yeah.
So,
For me, it's
and
because
they're trying to force us back in the office. And, I was hired as a completely remote employee, and then we got bought by somebody else. And now they're trying to force us in the office, and I'd have to drive, 2.5 hours a day, and I don't want to do that.
That
So, yeah.
is economically not worth it, no matter how much you make.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, that's yeah. So I'm trying to. So to me, everything that I'm doing, building these side businesses, is my at mo at best it's retirement biz, and at worst it's bridge the gap so I could get a mindless job working at the state or something,
Yeah,
and.
or going to work at Lowe's or Home Depot.
Or something like that. So yeah, I was over there talking to the excavator guy over or the rental guy over there at Home Depot, and I asked him some questions about the excavator. He doesn't know. So I'm like, are you going to even be able to help me? And he, oh, sign you up. But we'll see. But the so final advice. What's your Everybody's talking about putting their garden to bed for the wintertime, where it's like 90 degrees today, which sucks. What are you doing to put your gardens to bed for the wintertime?
Making more.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not putting them to bed. I'm
Yeah.
actively building more. So we've got
Right.
six finished. We've got 15 more. I've been filling them up with maple log old dried out maple logs, grass clippings, holly leaves from the thing is the only the good thing about work is I can take anything I want home pretty much to an extent. There's certain things you can't take, like metal. You can't take metal home.
Yeah.
So I've been given like eight, heavy equipment tracks to make raised beds out of. I'm still trying to think, is it worth it to get them or not? To just build them to be sweet potato beds, strawberry beds, asparagus beds. Is it worth it to have because they're rubber tracks.
It is. So one of
But
the stories we have from her, one of
would
the
you
stories,
have an issue with chemical leaching and the
maybe,
degradation of the rubber?
maybe.
That's the only
Well,
thing
we'll
I
get
worry
this, get
about.
this. So the one of the examples we had when we examples we had in permaculture class, there's a guy, Chicago Honey dude, and this guy got a vacant lot in Chicago. You can see the Sears Tower in the background, right? And the lot is two thirds cement and one third dirt that's got tons of that's got glass and metal and stuff in it. So he made some deal with the police department to take their horse manure.
Yeah.
And he didn't realize that he was going to get like 10 truckloads of horse manure. So he got all that and he built raised beds on the dirt part, but he took the compost and put it on right smack on top of the cement and just build mounds right on top of the cement and planted sweet potatoes into them. And the sweet potatoes grew great, and all he had to do was just put his shovel or whatever in there, or fork or whatever in there, and kind of shake it a little bit, and the sweet potatoes came out because they're sitting on top of concrete.
Yeah.
So I mean, he had like 3 or 4 feet of compost on top of concrete, but it was super easy to harvest the
Yeah,
sweet potatoes.
they've also got these tires. They're like 8 foot tall tires. I don't know. I don't know what machine they were on. I think it's like one of the big pieces of machinery that they used to
Like
have.
tractors or something, yeah. So I mean,
Bigger than tractor, but
you
it's
could
like
build them. I mean, you could,
that
you
right there,
know.
all I gotta do is to put it on its side, and that's a raised bed.
Yeah, exactly. So the
So I'm just trying to figure if it's worth the potential degradation of the rubber into the soil,
maybe that could be a problem.
am I gonna build soil that's so healthy that it's not gonna matter?
Now
Because
you're using IBC totes right now that some of them had stuff in it, so
true, because I mean it's. I personally see it as there's going to be microbacteria in the soil, microorganisms in the soil, and I 100% believe that the earth and the dirt can heal itself. So, are you going to have microorganisms and bacteria come in and just clean it, like basically eat it as waste, and then just remove it completely from the soil? But again, like, yeah, I use my garden beds. Like, will chemicals leach into that over time? Maybe. But it's like, but will it? I don't know the process and the degradation of these materials, because I mean IBC tote plastic is thick plastic. You know, it's meant to hold liquids for a long period of time. So I intend to come back and put like cedar panels all the way up by raised bed so it doesn't get sunlight, so they last longer, they won't deteriorate from the sun. But I've had some out there for 4 years now. I could kick them, like they're not dry rotting, they're not,
No, they're
you
not,
know, I
no.
could hit them with an axe and they'll split, but it's an axe,
Yeah.
so I
So
want to
yeah,
do
I'm
it.
following the same thing as you're doing is, I'm just building beds all I want to build beds all the way up and down the driveway. I got a
Yeah.
20 or two tenths of a mile driveway, almost a quarter of a mile.
If
And
you could get the tire tracks, would you?
no.
Is there any reason why?
I don't usually do that for raised beds. I just basically just make beds into the ground.
Okay.
Or I just mound up a whole bunch of compost on top of the ground, and eventually it'll break down the top layers of clay. So yeah, I mean basically you've seen my thing. I mean basically I use a broad fork. I turn the sod over.
Yeah.
I put a layer of compost on it, and I put milpa on it, and then wood chips. I let that go for a year. And then I chop and drop it, put some more wood chips on it, maybe a little bit more
Yeah.
compost, and then and then I got a reasonable garden bed.
Yeah, true.
And I got yield for that entire year, and I got mulch for the wintertime. So I mean, that's my That's my strategy across the board, pretty much for everything. And I had a raised bed that I made, and then somehow lamb's quarters got in there and started growing out the side in between the in, lamb's quarter seed got in there, and then it started growing out through the cracks between the boards and the side. And I'm just like, yeah, this ain't worth it. I can have lamb's quarters growing out of my regular bed. I don't need the thing falling apart because it's got lamb's quarters growing out the side that I can't get to because it's, it's sticking out the side. But yeah, we'll see. One of the things that I saw today that was really encouraging was one of the guys selling chestnuts adds mycorrhizal powder in there. And I haven't tried that, but he says it's like night and day.
There's a that green cover that's what they use.
But they only use it on legumes. I've never used it on chestnuts, so
If
I'm
I'm
going to
not
try that on
mistaken, if I'm
chestnuts.
not mistaken, they coat all their seed in that. And I know their cover crops that they do. Because I got my first cover crop from them. I ordered it today. I've bought
I
seed
thought you
from
had stuff from them
I
last
had bought
spring.
it. I did. I bought stuff from there. I didn't plant it.
I see.
So I still have I'm waiting till I will probably plant I like the chicory, plantain, trifoliate. I will probably plant it in the next week or two. Like 4 to 6 weeks before a frost. So that's probably what I'll do with those. But I didn't get an actual cover crop and I got it. I'm gonna plant it. The shipping is atrocious. So if I ever make another order, I will probably make an order that is enough seed to last me a year and a half. So if I the hopefully I'm really kind of just got getting the cover crop to cover myself on my overstocking issue because I know I have. I know I just need there to be enough food for everybody and if anything happen. But we're getting like 50, 60 bales of hay. They're still gonna get, I guess they each get what, like a half a cup of grain each goat, and then like or I give the cow like a whole scoop. I don't really care right now. It's so cheap to feed grain. Even if you're feeding good grain, I buy it from a mill. It's like 25 cents a pound. So it doesn't hurt me. All my money goes straight into the farm. So all I'm doing is essentially taking. I'm buying food, feeding them food, and they're pooping it out. So in my mind, all I'm doing is adding more biomass by feeding them grain. And then we got the hay. So depending on how the cover crop performs this next fall through winter, because it should last through spring. So depending on how it performs, the way I'm going to use it, depends on if I'll get any more.
Cool. Thanks, Grant.
Oh, you're welcome.
Check out the Permies Digital Marketplace. It's your source for all things permaculture for your homestead, side hustle, and designing your intentional life, from video courses to blueprints to books. There's a link in the show notes, Permies Digital Marketplace. Check it out. Thank you for listening to Thrive in the Future podcast. If you like what you hear, please click that like or subscribe button in your favorite podcast app. Follow us on Twitter at ThriveInTheFute and also go to ThriveInTheFuture.com. If you like this content, then shoot us a tip on Venmo or Cash App at ThriveInTheFuture or go check out the stuff on our stuff page on ThriveInTheFuture.com/stuff. You'll help support the podcast and maybe a little less hysteria in your life. Take care, everybody.